there is a true king. Verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." Magi feature in the history of the East since before the time that Daniel was brought to learn the language and literature of the Babylonians. 400 years after Jesus, they are still there as Persian civil servants. They advised the king, they worked as diplomats, they wrote laws and histories and mathematics and magic spells and star charts. These Magi, from beyond the Roman Empire, say that they have seen a star, a sign from beyond the earth. And they recognize it as his star, the sign of a king. Sometimes to settle a dispute, we will turn to a third party, an independent arbitrator, someone who knows their stuff and isn't beholden to either side. Well, here is a group of outside experts. They know kingdoms and they know kings, and they aren't from this kingdom or even this empire. They are independent confirmation. There is a true king. Because there is a true king, they ask the unexpected question. Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? Herod was the king the Romans had put in place. Herod was not a Jew at all, and Herod was not born as king. So, verse 3, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Though this question was unexpected, Jewish scholars were able to advise their king where he should look. "Well, in Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." The true king, Jesus, is going to shepherd his people. A shepherd provides for his sheep. He leads them to water, to good grazing, to places of rest and shelter. A shepherd is a pioneer for his sheep. He goes on ahead of them. He doesn't drive them from behind. And a shepherd protects his sheep. Jesus is the true king. Jesus provides. He is a pioneer. He protects. It's easy to be fooled by earthly powers, power and money and reputation, technology, even medicine. All of these things, which are good in themselves, promise us fulfillment or a long life or even the good life. They can be good in themselves, but if they distract us from the shepherd, well then, they're not good. They are false kings. They push us to behave so that we can get all these things they promise us. They prepare us for a certain kind of life, a life that is grasping and jostling and reaching for satisfaction, but never quite reaching it. They are not the true king. Don't be taken in by their promises and lose sight of your provider. Don't be pushed around and stop following your pioneer. Don't get prepared for your life as if it will go on forever on earth and you don't need a protector for what comes next. There is a true king, and his name is Jesus. The true king deserves worship. Jesus deserves worship. The Magi said, "We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." And in verse 12, when they're finished, they just go home. The trip from Babylon to Jerusalem, according to Ezra chapter 7, verse 9, took 4 months. The Magi did that just to worship him. That's respect. Herod, in order to keep in with the Magi, lied to them, "Report to me so that I too may go and worship him." Now that just tells us again that the Magi think that this king deserves worship. Verse 9. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. and having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. These magi were used to worshipping their own King of Kings. It was from the Persians that the Greeks and then the Romans got the idea to make the emperors into gods. But here, again, is the true king. He's not in a palace in Babylon or in Rome. He's not even in Jerusalem. No, he sits in Bethlehem with his mother in a house. And they bowed down and worshipped him. There are three aspects of worship we can see in this scene. First, there's the bowing down. Just as they bent their itinerary out of shape to go and find this baby, they bend themselves down to demonstrate that he is important. They come to him. They seek him. They humble themselves before him. Then, there's the simple joy of worship. I know Dennis would love verse 10. When they saw the star, they literally rejoiced a very great joy. Jesus was worth what they could give. Think of a time at Christmas when you gave a present with love and effort and thought, and the person who received it was ungrateful or indifferent or undeserving. Now think of a time when you could give a present with joy because it was received in a way that fulfilled all your consideration or love or sheer hard work. That's the joy of worshipping someone who is worth your worship. Thirdly, the Magi opened their treasures. I don't want to come up with any symbolic meaning for the three gifts, except to say that they're the sort of riches that the East was known for. Precious metals finely worked, exotic expensive perfumes, and rare aromatic gum. These are their treasures, given to Jesus because he is the true king. In 2012, Prince William and his new wife rode from Westminster Abbey to Buckingham Palace in a beautiful open carriage that's often used for state occasions. If it had been raining, they would have used the Australian state coach, which was a gift to the Queen from the people of Australia in 1988 to celebrate our bicentennial. It was made by a man from Parks called Jim Frecklington. It has power windows and hydraulic suspension and heating, but it doesn't give the crowds as good a view. So, they used a different carriage, and the parents of the bride and groom rode in our coach. There is a joy and a pride in giving, and how much more when we give to someone or something that is truly worth what we have given, truly worth what we can give. So what gives you joy? What do you take significance from serving and giving to? What takes your best efforts and your first efforts? Let's be like the Magi, who weren't even Jews, let alone Christians. Let's treasure Jesus Christ. And what are your treasures? What are the things that you can do that other people can't? How can you be you and serve Jesus? Let's open up our treasures, the riches that God has given us, and let's hand them to Jesus. He is worth all that we have to give. Jesus deserves our worship. But what the true king gets instead of worship is persecution. The true king deserves worship, but he gets hostility. In this chapter, we see King Herod disturbed and enraged, and that legacy is one that continues after his death. In verse 3, when Herod heard about the child, born as the king of the Jews, he was disturbed. The city he ruled from was disturbed. Where is the true king? What true king? Where? Who? Since when? Herod is clearly up to something when he calls the Magi in secretly and inquires carefully everything they know. But in verse 12, they were warned in a dream not to go back to Herod. And so, in a bit of a diplomatic faux pas, they left the country by another road. It saved Jesus' life, and perhaps it saved theirs too, but it made Herod mad. How dare they deceive him when he was busy deceiving them? Verse 16. When Herod realized that he'd been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. That's the sort of shepherd Herod was. Not a protector, not a pioneer, not a provider. He sends and he takes and he kills to keep his control. Herod went to his grave a few years later, sure that he'd stamped out the threat to his power and his legacy. He didn't know that Joseph had escaped with his family to Egypt. But when it was time to return to Judea, Herod's kingdom had been split up between his surviving sons. And one of them, Archelaus, has a reputation in history as being as bad as his father. Herod's brutality was passed down. So Joseph and Mary and Jesus settled up north in Nazareth, far away from the temple and the palace and the holy city. The true king deserved worship, but he became a refugee. My wife is a good cook and always uses an egg cracking cup. You can use any cup, but the key is to crack the egg into the cup and only after that to pour it into the bowl. Otherwise, and I'm sure lots of folks here are nodding along, sometimes you crack a good looking egg, but it's rotten inside and you pour stinking rotten egg into your mixture. The whole thing is ruined and you have to start again. Our world can look good. People can look good, but it's rotten. We see that when God gives his kingdom a little tap and rottenness comes out. The true king came to his own people and they would not receive him. He threatened Herod's power. Even the religious leaders just served the interests of that power. They knew how to recognize the king, so they told Herod how to do it. Herod was disturbed at losing control. Herod was enraged that other people did to him what he did to others. Herod would slaughter children rather than worship the true king. There's no joy in this part of the story. We look at Herod and we learn, as we learn from Psalm 2, that our world and our rulers are hostile to Jesus Christ. Don't be Herod. Don't be Herod. Don't be disturbed that Jesus wants to be Lord of your life. Welcome him and worship him. Don't see your control as such a wonderful thing. If it means that you can't worship Jesus, then let go of it. If you would harm children rather than worship the one who deserves your obedience, then stop. As you follow Jesus, don't be surprised if you suffer. That's easy for me to say. I'm a professional Christian in a country where it's not illegal to be a Christian. But we are promised that we will get bad reactions as well as good ones to the good news of Jesus. Everyone looks great until our eggs get cracked. I'm not saying that everything that happens to us is persecution. I'm speaking to you by video right now because the government has told me not to come to church. But that's not persecution, it's care. The government doesn't want any of you to catch coronavirus, and I don't know what this cold is. The true king got persecution. Jesus' followers should expect hostility because Jesus got hostility. But this doesn't mean that God is stymied. God is still in control. For starters, God sent a star to mark Jesus' birth. God is completely in control. All through this chapter, God warns the Magi and Joseph in dreams. God knows exactly what's going on and what people need to do. In verses 12 and 22, we read, having been warned in a dream, and people choose to go a different path. In verses 13 and 19, the angel of the Lord appears to Joseph and says, get up, take the child and his mother, and go. First, it's to avoid death, but then later, it's because Herod has died, not Jesus. Herod set himself against God's plans, but God is in control. The Jewish leaders quoted Old Testament prophecy, and Matthew does too. The first pair of dream warnings happened to fulfill what was said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. The second pair happened to fulfill another prophecy. He will be called a Nazarene. God is in control. And in the middle of those two prophecies, when Herod is doing his worst, in verse 18, we have the sad words of Jeremiah. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted, for they are no more. They are no more. Sin has hurt more of our people. Death has conquered again. But there is a true king, and God's plans for him are not stymied by Herod's evil. No, this too is the fulfillment of prophecy. God is in control. Although Jesus becomes a character in the story of the human race, the central character, in fact, in him we're not dealing with a mere character in the story. He is the author. Nothing is beyond his control. The worst tragedy, the deepest villainy, the most stinky rottenness, he's in control of all of it, and he can use it for his glory and for the good of his people. Here is a blessing for you. May God never use the failure of your plans to bring about good for his people. Don't be that guy. Take your plans to King Jesus. Exercise your authority to live up to the responsibilities that God gives you, and not for yourself and for your own gratification. Let's live as if we believe that a good and loving God is in control. God is in control. God is in control. His true king draws hostility from our world, but his true king deserves our worship, because there is a true king, God's true king for us, Jesus Christ, who shepherds his people, Jesus Christ, our rescuer.